Welcome to Shift, a college admissions ACT and SAT podcast for a changing world. I'm Tyler, the founder of Achievable, and we have an affordable ACT course that includes everything you need to ace your ACT test. It has the full textbook, tons of ACT questions that are backed by our memory-enhancing algorithm, videos on key topics, a built-in study planner, and full-length practice exams. You can get a free trial by going to achievable.me, and if you like it, the code podcast will get you 10% off at checkout. Now, let's get started. Today, we've got Jason Morgan with us. And Jason, I'd love if you could introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah. Name's Jason Morgan. I've been a private tutor in all the AP histories for almost 20 years now. Not only have I tutored hundreds of clients in those things, but I've also written a lot of the AP history exams and materials for the Princeton Review. So I update the premium AP prep titles for AP European History for the Princeton Review. I do that almost basically every year. I've also updated the AP World History and the AP US History as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, so then that makes you the perfect person to talk to about how to study for AP History exams, right? I think maybe to start this out, rather than just jumping into what should people do, why don't we start with what shouldn't people do? I feel like there's a lot of kind of things that might seem like you should obviously do them that are actually bad ideas. So you want to dig into that?
Yeah, a lot of students who don't have good study strategies immediately crack open their textbook and start looking at these tiny little details about historical eras, and they get lost in the weeds really fast. That's the worst thing you can do. You should absolutely not do that. So don't start with your textbooks. Don't use primary sources. Don't memorize dates, leaders, kings, presidents, and don't watch YouTube videos, not at first. What you should do is think of studying for this exam, whether it be US, European, or world, as like you're flying a drone. Envision, sure. Let's say it's U.S. history. Envision you're in U.S. history is like a piece of land, a big piece of land, and you're trying to see all of it at once. Don't fly 3 feet above the ground with your drone trying to see all of it. You won't. It'll take you forever. It's better to lift that drone all the way up to 1,000 feet and see it from that perspective first, and then slowly lower yourself down and get more granular and more detailed. But you have to do it in that order.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So then, yeah. I mean, other than not using textbooks, right? Like what are some of the other, and starting at a high level, what are some of the other things students shouldn't do?
Don't use the textbooks. Don't use primary sources. Don't memorize a string of details. Don't watch YouTube videos right away. And don't rely on your friends right away. You should do it alone at first.
Got it.
Yeah. What they should do, this is the most important thing, and for those of you who are listening, I would recommend writing this down if you have AP exams coming up in May. Or what you should do at first is absolutely make a list of all the eras of history in your course. There should be about 20 of them, no matter which course you're taking. If you're taking U.S. history, for example, you know, you would begin with like the Columbian era, where the Spanish, the Dutch, and the French discovered the North America, moved to 1610 when the English arrived, both in Massachusetts and in Virginia, and then the century of neglect, and then you get to the 1763, and you get to the pre-colonial, pre-revolutionary war stuff. Just write out these eras. U.S. history, there's about 20 of them. European history, there's maybe 25. World history is a little tougher to define. Memorize that list. When you memorize that list, everything else will fall into place more easily.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it kind of gives you like a structure when you're getting started that you can start to fit events and other things into, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you make 20 different buckets, you know? So then after that, you bring the drone from 1,000 feet down to like 700 feet. And you make a list of inside each era of the major stories or trends that occurred in each era. Usually there's a 2 to 3. Memorize those. That's your drone getting closer to the ground. Okay.
Right. Okay. So now you're kind of then up to like 60 things, right?
Yeah, maximum of 60 things to know. Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. Bring the drone to the next level down, lower it to 300 feet above the ground. And now, under each era, you make a list of major people, places, events. I would use no more than 10 in each era. And some, honestly, some eras won't even have that much, and some eras will have a lot more than that. But keep it to an average of 10. Memorize those. And now you're at 300 feet above the ground. Once you've memorized all of those specific things, then you can turn to your left and to your right, and you can start to connect the eras with one another. Okay. This is probably the most difficult thing to do, because those connections are really hard to do when you're a high school student. Usually you need a teacher to point that out to you. Even better, a tutor, someone like me, to point that out to you. Mm-hmm. Also, test prep books, like the one at the Princeton Review, like the ones they sell, those can really help at this stage as well.
Got it. Yeah. And then with all that, that covers sort of the preparation part a little bit. What do you want to cover next? Do you want to go into the essay, or do you want to go through like the prep process in detail?
We can do the essay next, and then we can go back to the process in terms of dates.
Great. All right. So yeah, let's talk about the essays. So, I mean, it sounds like basically like this whole sort of like building your little era map or timeline even, with all the details in it and then memorizing that, is to help set you up for the essays. Is that right?
Sure. Well, it helps for the multiple choice as well, but it really helps for the essays. Yeah.
Yeah. So then once you, once you've got, so you've sat down in front of your essay, what are some tips you have for getting started on that?
Well, if you've done this process that I just outlined, it should take about a month. If you've done that, then that will take care of a lot of your stress and your content that you need for the essays. I've found over the years that there's a lot you can criticize the American educational system for, but one thing it's hard to criticize us for is teaching essay structure. We're really good at drilling essay structure into students' heads. So I've found that most students do understand how to structure a persuasive essay, and that's not an issue, at least the population that I help.
Right.
I think their problems come in other ways with regards to the essay. Many, many students taking the AP exams stress out that their essays aren't good enough, that they're not as good as the essays they write for class, you know, mm-hmm. like a regular paper. But I just want to stress to everyone listening that the AP essays are first drafts. You write them in about 30 to 45 minutes. And that's it. You don't get to fix them or change them, and you don't get to research them. The readers aren't expecting you to write something that's really high level, even for high school, because they know you have more time to do a paper for class. They're just hoping that you have a good first draft that is sort of structurally sound and it uses some evidence and you don't contradict yourself. that's the biggest thing. I know the students who have the most trouble understanding this topic are the perfectionists.
Right.
And if you're a perfectionist, you've got to learn that the perfect is the enemy of the good. And you always want to be on the side of the good, not on the side of the perfect. So.
Well, more just like perfect is not the point, right? Like it's more about, can you take the evidence and take the eras and things that you've got and put together a cohesive argument, preferably, you know, like you said, following that typical essay structure. Would you say it's pretty normal to say intro, three body paragraphs, and then conclusion, roughly?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's other ways to structure a history essay, but why would you? That's such an obvious way to reduce stress on the day of the exam, is to follow the structure that you've known for years and which readers expect to a degree. So, yeah. Feel free to rely on that structure. I'd also point out that you should always include what I call the cycle of evidence in the body paragraphs, which means that you should always do three steps. You should set up a piece of evidence, then give the evidence, and finally analyze the evidence. This is a cycle, and you should do this for a history essay. You should do this twice in every paragraph, if possible.
Okay.
You know, sometimes history teachers give these unintelligible comments to their students. They say stuff like, "You didn't go deep enough," and the students come to me and say, "What does this mean?" And I have to tell them what the teacher is trying to say is that he or she wants another cycle of evidence in this paragraph, you know? So that's one way to think about the essays as well.
Yeah. Well, and I also think that, I mean, now we're really starting to get some parameters around this essay, right? Like, you know, roughly speaking, there's, you know, in 20 eras, 3 major trends per era. And then, you know, you're trying to take basically 6 of those and put them into an essay, right? So it all's starting to kind of like take shape. What do you do about the intro and conclusion? What is your tips for that?
It's really easy. In the histories, no matter what history course you're taking, use the era before the one that you're writing about for your introduction. And then use the era after the one you're writing about for the conclusion. It's the most natural thing in the world as a writer to go chronologically through history. So I'll give you an example. If you're writing about FDR and World War II for your AP essay, then start your essay by describing what happened in the era before, which is the 1920s. And then end your essay by talking about what followed FDR in World War II, which was the Cold War in the 1950s. It's really natural. So students who are confused about how to start a history essay, you really shouldn't be. This is the easiest one to start of all the different AP exams that there are.
Right. Well, and I think there's another aspect of it too that I think is like that you just said, which is by having the before era in the intro and the after era in the conclusion, you are naturally building the essay in a narrative format where it's like, so before there was this, then these things happened, and then afterwards these other things happened because of it. And I think that it'd be really easy if you didn't follow that advice to just write an essay that was, you know, intro, something happened, 3 things about it, and then conclusion, that thing happened, right? So it's important to tie it into the narrative, and, you know, history is a timeline.
Yeah. I just think of like those little barrels of plastic red monkeys, you know, the ones that have the hands that hook onto other hands of other monkeys. What you want to show the reader is that, you know, you've got at least 3 monkeys in your essay. The first one, the main one, and the last one. It's not rocket science if you just think of it that way.
Right. Great. Well, yeah, I mean, and with all these tests and things that you've worked on yourself, you know, I think in your notes you told me you wrote nearly 20 AP history exams. What was it like writing those, and kind of how does that inform some of the advice that you give students?
I'd say writing the exam is probably harder than taking an exam. You have to put a lot of thought into everything. I'd say it's fairly fun to write to find the primary sources that you use, you know, the little stimulus sources for the multiple choice, and then the bigger sources you use in the DBQs. You get to go hunting. You're a history hunter for a while. You get to go to Hobby Trust, and you get to go to Gutenberg and all sorts of other places to find primary sources. It's you can sit on your couch and do it. It takes me about 4 to 6 weeks to write an exam, working about 2 hours a day, no more than that. I'd say the multiple choice is fairly easy to write for me. The hardest thing to write is the DBQs. To make a DBQ is a tough exercise, because you've got to give the test taker a way to answer the question, or at least 2 ways to answer the question, without being obvious about it, you know?
Yeah.
Also,
what is a DBQ? For the ignorant like me.
It's okay. It's a database question. It's they give you 7 sources. It used to be more, but now it's about 7 sources, and you have to sort of synthesize an essay around those 7 sources.
Got it. Okay. Cool. Yeah, then let's talk about, I mean, you promised to get back to the prep process earlier when we were chatting. I'd love to do that now, right? I think, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about, like, don't watch YouTube, don't read your textbook. You should, you know, make a list of eras. You should have two or three bullet points under each era with the major events and what they were. And then you should be able to connect them to each other with a little bit of causality. Other than that, I mean, you know, let's talk maybe about timeline and talking about, you know, what else you can do to get prepared.
Yeah. So that process I outlined, you should start that. I'd say if your test is on May 15th, you should start about 2 months before. So put it on your calendars, start that process March 15th. It should take about a month. You should do it alone or using test prep books or and maybe the help of a private tutor. But don't rely on friends yet, okay? Mm-hmm. Once you've got that all done, which is going to be roughly early to mid-April, then you can start taking practice exams. I would recommend everyone take probably 3 practice exams is a good number, and do like 1 a week leading up to the exam. And when you get something wrong in the multiple choice, try to figure out why. Usually it's because you didn't fill out the eras properly earlier in the process. Mm-hmm. But once if the last thing you can do probably in the few weeks leading up to the exam is this is when you can get together with your friends who ideally would be doing the same process as you, this one that I'm describing.
Right.
What you do is you make a study group where everyone writes down an FRQ prompt, free response question about history, and you put it on a piece of paper. Everyone gets the same copy. Take 2 minutes, and everyone has to write down everything they can think of to answer that question. Okay, sit in a circle. And then, after the 2 minutes are up, you all compare notes. Who remembered what about this era? And then you all write down the stuff that you forgot from what other people have said. That piece of paper with that question, you keep it, you put it in a folder, and that becomes your study notes for the very last segment of the process leading up to the exam. This improves recall, okay? And that's the hardest thing for people taking history, AP history exams.
Yeah.
If you don't have friends to do this with, you can also do it with a tutor, someone like yours truly.
Great. Yeah, very cool. And I mean, we don't have an AP history course, but that's like a big thing in our test prep program too, is getting people to recall things and remember them.
Yeah.
And it just going back and re-reviewing what you've already studied, and basically making sure you stay on top of it and have it in your memory can increase your score by like 15% in some of the studies we've done, which is pretty crazy. That's actually a lot, right? on a test like this, is call it the difference between like a 1500 and a 1550.
Yeah, or on the ABCDE scale, it's a difference between a C+ and an A-. But yeah,
right. That's another way of putting it.
I make it crucified for this, but just for those listening who rely on YouTube to study for the AP exams, it's a supplementary tool. Those videos are very well done on certain YouTube history channels. I won't say which ones because they don't need me to shout them out, but they are supplemental ways of studying only, and you should only look at them near the end of the process to reflect what you've already learned and are recalling on your
right.
own.
Yeah, exactly. The structure is so important. Like the whole foundation of your study prep process is that structure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Great. Well, and then other than that, any specific things you'd like to add about how to study for each of the major AP history courses, right? US, European, and world history.
Yeah, I have quite a few. First of all, for those of you taking US history, please know the 50 states, be able to fill them out on a map. They do appear on the exam, particularly in the multiple choice section. They'll actually give you some shaded outlines of states, and you'll need to recognize what those are. Same with European history. A lot of European history students who can't name like Germany on a map, make sure you can name all the countries in Europe as they are right now. Remember also that Germany didn't exist until 1860, and Italy didn't exist until 1870. That's really important.
Yeah,
people forget. In terms of the wars, I hear from a lot of students that they're worried that they don't know all the battles of certain wars, like the Civil War or other things in European history. These are not military history exams, so you don't need to memorize those things. What's more important is to memorize the causes and then the effects of big wars. That's what you get tested on typically in the essays. Okay.
Got it.
In U.S. history, I have a few specific tips, since things I've seen over the years from students. First, don't view history through the lens of the presidency. There's been, what are we on now? 46, president number 46.
46, yeah.
There's not even 20 of them that are worth memorizing, okay? There's about 15 you should know, like the first five, and then most of the 20th century ones. I mean, mm-hmm. In the 1800s, there's Lincoln and there's Jackson, as well as the
that's funny, because I don't even know any other ones beyond that.
Yeah, Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe. The first five, you got to know those. Jackson, Lincoln, those two. And then the rest of the 1800s is kind of bare. The presidency was unimportant for the most part. Then in the 1900s, you start getting into what's called the imperial presidency. It grew in power as the century went along. And those are the ones that you should know more about, for sure.
Got it.
In addition to that, I would say make sure you know your three big waves of immigration for the U.S. history exam. The first one in the 1830s, the second in 40s. The second one was from 1870 to 1924. And the third one started in 1963 and has never stopped. We're in it right now.
Huh.
So that's for U.S. history. For European history, make sure you know your Protestant Revolution, your Scientific Revolution, your French Revolution, and your Industrial Revolution. Four big revolutions. These are the things that made modern Europe. And the course is basically answering the question, how did Europe go from like the sort of backwater continent in 1350 to essentially the most advanced continent in the world by the 1800s. So you don't need to know that many.
The downfall of feudalism might have helped a little bit with that. I mean, we don't need to get into the reasons why. We'll be here all day, but it's a pretty, it's a fascinating topic.
It is. It is. Yeah. Many people don't have the proper view that, you know, Europe was nothing in 1300 on the world stage, Yeah, you don't need to know too many kings or queens. You know, we can list out about 10 of them that you need. And then, unfortunately, Eastern Europe is rarely tested on the AP European history exam. So the history of Poland doesn't appear too much. I say that as someone of Polish descent, but it's not really there.
Yeah.
I think the hardest one is world history, in the sense that it's just so large. Mm-hmm. And even though it only tests you from 1200 onwards, the advice I would give to students who are listening in world history is to make a list of every empire that you need to know. Okay. Then put that list into a chart of some kind, maybe a flow chart, maybe a timeline, maybe a graph. I don't know how you want to do it. And then memorize it. Be able to like reproduce and write down that chart on a piece of paper if somebody asked you to do it. That's the best way to start studying for world history. And yeah, those are my tips.
Very cool. Anything else you want to close out with before we wrap up?
No, I don't have any other big ideas about history. I hope everyone does well on these exams with some of the tips that I've given them.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. Well, this has been Shift, a college admissions podcast for a changing world, hosted by Tyler from Achievable with Jason Morgan. And you can get a free trial of Achievable's ACT course by going to achievable.me, and be sure to use the code PODCAST to get 10% off at checkout.